Welcome to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and we just watched England be knocked out of Euro 2016 by Iceland, the smallest country to ever qualify for a European Championships or the World Cup. News has just reached us, Roy Hodgson has resigned, and I'm joined here today for, I guess, the post-mortem of England's Euro 2016 campaign with Nick English. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm as good as can be. James Dale?
I've been better.
You've been better? Yeah. And Mo Butt, how are you doing, man?
I'm just confused more than anything else, frankly.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to clear some of that confusion up for you. What happened? Nick, I'm going to come to you first.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to explain exactly. It was shambolic. It was awful. I mean, it was everything that you hoped England wouldn't be. They looked nervous. They looked poor on the ball. They looked tired. They lacked desire. They weren't set up in the right way. There were too many players playing out of position. They lacked a leader. Wayne Rooney in the second half gave one of the most abject performances I've seen in England shirt. Took his penalty very well. Up until the Iceland goal, actually, England looked very, very tidy.
And you almost say that taking his penalty well and not performing very well, that's kind of become Wayne Rooney's England career over the past 18 months.
You could say that, yeah. But I think the real issue is that once that second Iceland goal went in, England completely fell apart. And for the last 15 minutes, they looked more concerned with what they were going to say in the post-match interview than what they were doing on the pitch, except for Marcus Rashford, who looked at least a bit lively.
Well, in his post-match reaction, Roy Hodgson said, "These things happen," shortly before resigning from his post. James, what do you think went wrong for England?
Well, I mean, I think the clues were there against Russia and Slovakia, quite frankly. I think we all, you know, hoped that things would change. I think that kind of second half Wales performance gave us all this boost that, you know, oh, it'll be different against Iceland. We'll really come into it now. But, I mean, Hodgson's record speaks for itself. That's 3 wins in 3 major tournaments now. I mean, he's the highest paid manager at Euro 2016 as well. So no surprise that he's already been shown the door.
And Mo, I know you're a big critic of Hodgson. What does tonight really, really say about his reign as an England manager?
It just confirms that for all the good intentions and all the young players who blood and all the big talk about playing this way and that way, ultimately he is a coward and doesn't have the conviction or courage to even stand by his own tactics. So.
Strong words. I mean, it was surprising, given the amount of talk about we have to have different systems, different shapes we're going to play at the tournament. England didn't really seem certain of plan A, let alone plan B. James, I know you've been looking at some of the numbers. Why are England coming to Euro 2016 in the round of 16 still looking like they haven't quite sorted out how they're going to play?
Well, Hodgson just doesn't know his best team. It's as simple as that. I mean, he's brought Sterling back into the team today as kind of, I think he's watched, Belgium, and the likes of Germany over the last couple of days and thought the players that have done well have been these dribblers, you know, Julian Draxler, Eden Hazard. And I think he thought Sterling could be that player against Iceland today. But I mean, he's finished with 2 complete take-ons, 0 crosses. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. He just didn't play the part that he was meant to.
Some more numbers for you here. I mean, going into the game, we all knew what Iceland were about. They had the most defensive actions of Euro 2016. They had the lowest passing accuracy, lowest possession of the tournament, and the fewest passes per game of any team left in it. For contrast, England had the 3rd most possession of any team at Euro 2016. And while England have only been accurate with 33% of their shots, Iceland have been accurate with 56%. Nick, did we just go in with our eyes closed? What do you make of those stats and how England approached the game against Iceland?
Well, everyone knew that England before the tournament, England's forte was their attack, right? We knew that if we were going to win the tournament, it was going to be by outscoring other teams. It wasn't by shutting out teams. We weren't going to do in Italy. We weren't going to do what Spain tried to do. So we knew that Cahill and Smalling, okay, not the best, you know, attacking force around, but, you know, we'll make do. They can pass the ball a bit. They're physical. The issue really is that you don't concede from long throws at an international tournament if you want to pretend. And that's what we've been doing for 20-odd years. If you want to pretend to be a major country, a major force in football. And I think that's kind of what hit home at the end of that game. And those last 10 minutes is like England are no marks when it comes to international football. We've still not won a knockout game off home soil at the Euros. I can't remember, you know, the last time we put a convincing performance in a knockout game. You know, even at Euro 96 against Spain, it wasn't that convincing. So I guess, you know, it's always going to be that thing. The post-mortem's going to go on for ages and ages and ages, you know. It's going to be that thing. Hodgson's gone, which is a good thing. There's absolutely no one who can replace him. There's fewer candidates than there are for Prime Minister right now. So, you know, where do we go? It's really, really, really sad.
We'll get onto that in a second about successor for Hodgson. But I just want to bring Mo in on, basically, as Nick said, we were meant to be outscoring these teams. We had Vardy, we had Kane, we had Sturridge, we had Rashford, we had Rooney. Okay, he's playing in a midfield role, but he's still technically a forward. Why did all this firepower just not be brought to bear against the teams at Euro 2016?
Comes down to midfield, really. I mean, strikers are generally only as good as the passes they're supplied with. I mean, occasionally you'll get forwards that can dribble, take players on and make things out of their own, but England don't have any of those players. Vardy relied heavily on supply for Leicester City. Harry Kane is almost useless without players 10 yards away from him. And Sturridge is magnificent and he can actually, unlike anyone else, can actually pull something out of nothing. But when you're playing him wide right, and he was wide right, what are you going to do? And Rashford, wide left. It's like you put those guys, the ones that can make a difference, in the middle.
With Hodgson gone, who is there to replace him? Nick said that there are no candidates. James, is there anyone that stands out to you as a potential England manager of the post-Hodgson era?
Well, the good news is for everyone listening at home that Gareth Southgate is the immediate favourite by the bookies. His managerial record so far is obviously a fairly unconvincing spell at Middlesbrough, and obviously what he's done with the under-21s, which is a whole different kettle of fish. Next in line, you've got Gary Neville, who had a rather, let's say, big learning curve at Valencia. Then you've got Alan Pardew, who, again, he hasn't really kind of hit the highs. He's never really taken charge of Champions League football, major tournaments. You know, so it's where do we go from here? I don't know.
I mean, I think you've got to look at Big Sam at this point. What more does he have to do? What more does he have to do? Mo's literally put his hands in the air. He's preaching because he knows that Big Sam is the guy. I mean, the thing is with Big Sam, right? Sam Allardyce, I'll clear his full name.
He's going to be the England manager. You've got to show a bit of respect to the man.
He deserves the respect. The thing is about Sam Allardyce is everyone's like, you can't give a Big Sam. The football's going to be atrocious. The football's not been great, right? Okay, there were a couple of games where it looked quite tidy and we had some decent interplay with the players that we have. But fundamentally, tournament football is never that pretty. There's not many teams that make it look that good. There's maybe a one-off performance. You know, Germany like absolutely smashed it in their round of 16 game. They look lovely. But they've got Mesut Ozil. They've got Julian Draxler. You know, they've got Toni Kroos. They've got not world-class midfielders. You can make the game look that easy.
And we've got Wayne Rooney,
okay, who looked shattered in that second half. Sam Allardyce could actually get something out of these players resembling a cohesive 90-minute performance where everyone's playing in the right position. And I think the lack of other English top-class English managers, Eddie Howe's too young, Gareth Southgate, I mean, James is right. I mean, his manager achievements, they don't speak for themselves at all.
You don't think he's the Joachim Löw of England waiting to take over?
I don't. I really don't. I don't think Gareth Southgate has anything to offer as England manager.
Yeah, Joachim Löw is a great example of what England do not have, which is a very, very astute tactical mind that could follow on from a demagogue like Klinsmann. You know, Southgate is just an average manager. Is he anything more than that?
He's a very nice man, apparently.
I'm sure he's lovely. You know, well-spoken and everything, but is he a good manager? I don't know. England need a good manager. Big Sam is, I love the idea of it because, you know, Big Sam is such a character and he's just so good at getting teams that aren't very good to play well above their level, which really is what England need. But, I mean, you have to look foreign, really, to be honest.
Before we do, can I just put a word out there? Harry Redknapp.
No, we've been through this. No.
Come on, this isn't 2005 anymore. I mean,
but if it was 2005, what kind of alt future could we be living in right now?
No.
Andros Townsend would definitely be at the Euros.
No, I think Harry Redknapp proved after Hodgson was appointed that not only he doesn't have the mentality to deal with any criticism or not getting what he wants, but also he is a checkbook manager and he always has been.
Yeah.
Good at identifying talent in the youth ranks, not a top-class manager.
I guess we're ruling out Tim Sherwood then as well. But anyway, enough about England. Let's have a look at, I mean, they have won the game tonight. They are through into the quarterfinals. It's an incredible achievement. Iceland, I think they have, to every 169th person in the country, there's one Icelandic man, in if you can look at England compared to Iceland. I mean, they're the size of Leicester as a country. How have they done this? James, have you got any thoughts about the secret behind Iceland's rise?
One word, resourcefulness. I just think they're by far the most resourceful team at the competition. I mean, if you look at it tonight, they've made 17 blocks. In the first half, they had 68% passing accuracy, whereas England had 89%, and they've scored two goals. One was off a throw-in. One was, you know, a hopeful shot, really, that squirmed under Joe Hart. But what they've done is they've just taken advantage of their chances, and they've, you know, they've defended for their lives, and when they get a chance, they put it away. England haven't.
They've defended like beavers.
Like beavers.
Quote Cammy.
Yeah, I just thought they were so tenacious. They were so tenacious, and they weren't afraid of England. They weren't afraid of Portugal. They haven't been afraid of anyone, which is really an admirable quality for a nation that's that small. They remind me of Rayo Vallecano a lot. They just go at teams. They're like, look, we'll defend deep, but then we'll come at you on the counter attack. We'll hit you hard. You know, the Portugal goal was a wonderment. And the goal against here, the first goal off the throw in, that was amazing. What a wonderful goal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mo's absolutely right, and so is James. They're tenacious, they're resourceful, you know, they go at teams, they're not afraid of anyone. But let's be honest here. You look at that team that England played today, there were not only opportunities there, you know, Jack Wilshere laid several on a plate for Harry Kane and for Jamie Vardy in that second half, and they didn't take them. And just generally, we looked so ponderous. We looked terrified. There was an overwhelming lack of quality in the England ranks today, and that's why we're out. It's not because, you know, you can blame Hodgson as much as you want, but it's annoying to use the word, but they bottled it. The England players absolutely bottled it out there. From Joe Hart to Gary Cahill to Jack Wilshere to Harry Kane, they all bottled it.
Last word from Mo?
Yeah, Joe Hart needs to be the premier. He'll probably be the big man front up as he always does, but he was absolutely useless. Did not come anywhere near to claiming the ball for the throw-in on the first goal as much as I enjoyed the first goal. And what he did on the second goal was just Sunday League.
Poor.
Just shocking.
Because he had one job. There were two shots in the first half and he let them both in. Which, I mean, I guess kind of sums up England's game. But there's been other football play today as well. We've had the clash of the juggernauts, Spain versus Italy. And you could say another result that didn't quite go to how people expected it to. Mo, I'm going to come to you as our resident Spain expert. What happened today?
I thought that went exactly like I thought it would do.
Well, fair enough.
Vicente Del Bosque didn't rotate his side. He's played the same team all four games at the Euros. And in the end of the second half, when Croatia turned it around against Spain, it wasn't so much that Croatia did anything tactically interesting. Just Spain got tired and started passing the ball more and more slowly. And so Croatia's press suddenly began dispossessing them more and more. And Italy just took it to the next level.
Xavi has spoken in the past about the difficulty Spain faced when they actually play against a 3-5-2. Do you reckon that the formation or the way that Conte Jordi's players, what do you think was most problematic for Spain to get past?
It's a bit of both. The thing is, the 3-5-2 is the natural counter-attacking move towards the Barcelona model, which is what Spain have copied. And that's why Pep Guardiola, back in 2011-12, switched Barcelona to play a three at the back, because he saw what was coming and he changed his formation as a reaction to that, pre-reaction to that, and it kind of worked. But Del Bosque doesn't have anything like that kind of ambition anymore. He used to, but this is not 2000 anymore. This is 2016, and he's just an old man.
I guess the other thing that I personally really took from the Spain match is just how uncomfortable Sergio Busquets looked. I mean, he is the guy who, out of anybody, kind of embodies Spanish football. Maybe after Xavi, he is the one that kind of sums it up.
That, yeah.
So, I mean, he's usually the man who can control any game you put in front of him. He can shrug off any attempt to press him. They bypassed him. How did that happen?
I mean, it's a combination of two things. One is Busquets played, I think, almost apart from until like March, I think he played basically every single game for Barcelona, like 90 minutes most of the time. Fatigue set in. He played all three games previous to this, didn't come off, was never rested. He started to look more tired. And the second thing was, Italy are very, very clever. Cesc Fabregas is basically a traffic cone with legs. and Iniesta, again, I love him. He's 32 years old. He looked 32 years old. He was great for two games. Started to slow down against Croatia. Got less and less effective. They were not near enough to Busquets for him to do anything. He was overwhelmed by four guys who just pressed and pressed and pressed and pressed. And he couldn't stop the tide.
I mean, James, I mean, what did you make of Italy? I mean, we've heard there about Spain's faults, but Italy were fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I think it shows that the system can prevail, really. I mean, Conte has been obviously one of the success stories of this tournament. His tactical nous is just astounding. I think every Chelsea fan can just be sat enjoying the tournament, if not for England's sake, at least for the fact that they're going to have a world-class manager come the end of the tournament. I mean, the three central defenders, Bonucci, Chiellini and Barzagli, have just been out of this world. And if you look at them and compare them to, say, England's Smalling and Cahill and Stones, they're just not even in the same ballpark. Mm. And I think when you've got, you know, three centre-backs like that, he's used them to good effect. He's put them all in, played, you know, 3-5-2, 3-4-1-1. You know, he's mixed it up, but he's always kept those three centre-backs in line because he knows they're his best players. Mm. And, you know, he deserves full marks for that.
Italy are going to play Germany next. Do you think that could be maybe the deciding game from that half of the tournament, or are France still in it as far as you're concerned, Nick?
Yeah, I think Italy and Germany have looked the most convincing so far. I mean, as James said, Conte's tactical nous is astonishing. Like, the whole plan of forcing the ball all the way over to Juanfran on the right side because they know Juanfran doesn't like playing 1-2s and getting up and down the pitch. I mean, it just worked beautifully. Mm. And then they forced the ball back to De Gea. Anyway, I'm diverging. I think it's going to be very interesting to see Germany come up against Italy because you have Germany can play on the counter-attack or they can play possession football, right? Italy can play any three different ways in terms of defending. They can drop deep, they can push high, and they can also just shift to a five at the back. So you've got two teams that are extraordinarily tactically flexible, probably the two best tactical managers in the competition. And also you've basically got a ream of sort of amazing attacking midfielders in Ozil and Draxler. Müller's yet to show up as well, by the way. They might consider dropping him. Mm. And also you've basically got Italy have got the best centre-backs in the tournament. It's going to be very, very interesting to watch. It might be a really dry game. It might end up happening that it's really boring to watch, but it'll be fascinating, I think, from a tactical point of view.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. I think we're reminiscent of Germany-France from the World Cup, which was 1-0, ended on with a Hummels header, and it was not an exciting game, but tactically it was very interesting to see what they did. And I think it's going to be really, really tricky for Germany. As much as Germany are, I mean, everyone rates Germany. They're the fantastic, they're the world champions. They're a very good side. I just think Italy have always done well against them in tournaments. I think they constantly beat them, even when, like, for example, in 2012, when they really shouldn't have been on that same level. And I think you just look at what they did to Spain. And they really, if it wasn't for Piqué and De Gea, who were both excellent, Spain would have been absolutely smashed. Like, it would have been like worse than the 5-1 from the World Cup. We would have been talking like 5-0, maybe even more. I think Germany they're being very good, but they've not really impressed against a really good side. I think there's a little bit of vulnerability there, shall we say. Just a little bit. It's not much, but Boateng and Hummels haven't really been tested. They could be in for a rude awakening.
Interesting. Obviously, on the other side of the draw, we've got Belgium, and they've come to life, you could say, with their 4-0 win over Hungary. Is this the Belgian team we've been waiting, 4 years to see? Is it happened now? Is this fine?
More like 10, right?
Here we go, 10 years. A decade-long wait for Belgium to do what they do. Guys, what do you make of Belgium? Are they now favourites? Can they be put up there?
No, they can't be put up there, but they'll probably, I mean, they're playing well enough to make it to the final. Mm. It'll be interesting to see if they come up against Portugal and how they deal with that incredibly boring Portugal side. But the thing is that what's worked for them is Mark Wilmots has sort of gone, do you know what? Hands up. I was wrong. He's starting to actually change things to what everyone's been saying. Mm. Playing Kevin De Bruyne in the middle, playing Eden Hazard at left.
Oh, they were so good.
They work brilliantly together. I mean, the thing is like Hungary just kept coming and coming, and they could have gotten a couple of goals, but every time they lost the ball, I mean, they just looked so vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, you play De Bruyne in the middle, you play Eden Hazard out on the left. Lukaku moves around. You know, I remember going to see Fulham Everton once in the Capital One Cup. And Lukaku, you don't notice it when the ball's at the other end of the pitch, but he's constantly running, dragging defenders everywhere. It's a nightmare to play against. Mm. And then we've got Dries Mertens on the right, who offers natural width. Yeah, that's a good side. I don't think they've looked as impressive, or they've played a team as good. They've played Italy, obviously, and they got, you know, dismantled.
Yeah.
So if they face a Germany, an Italy, a France, I think they might struggle a little bit more. Mm. But yeah, they've at least, you know, stamped their mark on the tournament, which is probably, you know, very, very much satisfaction for the Belgian fans who've been wanting them to come good for so long.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, as we say, the other team they're going to face in that side of the draw, because weirdly, all the big teams are on the other side of the draw. It's going to be Portugal, look like the most likely team to stop Belgium getting to the final. We had a bit of a controversial piece after the game.
You wrote the Portugal one.
I did write it. saying that Cristiano Ronaldo is holding Portugal back. Now, the reason why I say that is I was looking at the game. Renato Sanches was absolutely running things once he came in at halftime. And I actually thought that Portugal looked better once Ronaldo dropped back from the front, started playing more like an orthodox winger. Is that the way forward for Portugal, Mo? Do they have to start moving Ronaldo away from the attack?
Greg, if you hadn't written it, I would have written it. You're absolutely correct. That's absolutely what needs to happen.
I'm not paying him for this, but this is fantastic.
No, it absolutely is what needs to happen. Cristiano Ronaldo is one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. Top leading goal scorer in Portuguese history.
But if you can't feed him, what are you going to do?
Exactly. Phenomenal. And, you know, Portugal, this is the thing. Portugal actually now have a decent young players that can actually play. João Mário is very good. André Gomes is very good. Renato Sanches is... I mean, the man looks like Clarence Seedorf reincarnate. You know, it's they're such a good side. Danilo Pereira, William Carvalho. You need to build around these youngsters, not around this 31-year-old goal-scoring mega thing.
Cristiano Ronaldo is still, without doubt, Portugal's best player and deserves all the attention he gets. he deserves to have the team built around him. If they make it to the final, I guarantee it'll be because of him. He's already scored 2 goals. I know those both came in the same game. And, you know, he hasn't hit the heights that he was meant to. But on their side of the draw, they're very fortunate that, as we've already mentioned, you know, they could quite easily get to the final now. And I think Ronaldo will be fully behind that.
I guess the other option is you just actually play Quaresma for a game and have a front three of Nani, Quaresma and Ronaldo and just basically be an international version of Crystal Palace.
I Quaresma is one of those great enigmas, isn't he? He's just... How has he not been good? He's so talented. It's just incredible.
He looks like he's about 5 stone heavier than he was when he was good as well, Ricardo Quaresma. He works off the bench, though. He holds up the ball well in the corner. Mm. I mean, I'd rather not go into that Portugal-Croatia game because I think I blacked out about 17
awful.
Times in the second half. But I think I agree with James. I think Ronaldo don't have... Ronaldo. Portugal, that's literally how it's in,
that's
ingrained,
a good
how it's ingrained into my brain. Portugal don't have a striker. Right?
Mm.
They've never had a striker, right? This is the thing.
Going on Helder Postiga there.
Yeah. Sorry, Pauleta. Sorry, Nuno Gomes. Too many no marks to mention. So you play Ronaldo up front. And the other great thing about playing Ronaldo up front, when you've got Nani and Vieirinha and like good wide players, is that if you chuck the ball into the box, Ronaldo's going to have a bloody good go at getting at it. And the thing is he's lethal in the air and he picks up scraps. I actually think he's been a little bit unlucky not to have 4 or 5 goals by now. He missed a penalty, he's hit the woodwork. You know, he looked incredibly frustrated during the group stages.
Doesn't he always look incredibly frustrated?
Yeah, but that's what he's like, isn't he? You know, it's exactly as Mo says, he's a goal scoring mega thing. you know, that's beautiful use of the English language. But what I mean to say is that he's exactly that. It's never enough for him. He's like, you remember that Simpsons episode where Homer's in hell eating donuts and they think they're going to run out of donuts, right? And Satan's getting all twitchy because he hasn't got enough donuts. That's what Ronaldo's like. It's never enough for him.
Cristiano Ronaldo making Satan twitchy at Euro 2016.
Yeah, no, that's no. I mean, when I said they shouldn't build around him, they should play him up front. I'm not saying drop the guy. I'm saying just the ball primary ball handlers should be João Mário, Renato Sanches, André Gomes. He should be at the end in the box doing what he does and scoring goals. But I'll tell you what, I'm, as bad as Croatia Portugal was, I bet you Poland Portugal is even worse.
Good Lord.
Poland are terrible. Apart from Jakub Blaszczykowski, they are just unwatchable. It's going to be awful. Robert Lewandowski is the flop of the tournament. It's going to be hideous.
So we've got one half of the draw, which we're not really certain the quality is quite there. Who are we actually bigging up as the favourites to win it at this point then?
For me, it's still Germany. I think if they've been the best team in the tournament that I've watched, certainly. I think when I saw Julian Draxler play, I was just completely in awe of him and thought, you know, the fact that you've got Thomas Müller not performing really, and he's come in and just been, you know, excellent. The amount of options they've got in the forward areas, and as Nick already said, the fact that they can play counter-attacking football or possession-based football just makes them so adaptable. And I think Italy will really face a big challenge in them. And if they can get past Germany, I would say Italy, but for me, it's still the Germans.
I'm going to go with France still. There is a bit of bias here. But, you know, our chief reporter, Greg Stobart, the other day was saying in the office that you only really need to play well once or twice in a tournament to actually win it. France haven't played well yet.
Mm.
They haven't. They really haven't. They did very, very well to claw back against Republic of Ireland. Paul Pogba, for the past two games, playing on the left side of a 4-3-3, has been absolutely ridiculously good.
Yeah.
Right? Everyone seems to be like, oh, where's Paul Pogba? Like, he was hyped as the pre-tournament, like, you know, machine. He's not a goal scorer.
Mm.
He's not a guy who gets you 20 assists a season. He's a guy who runs the midfield, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
Weirdly, Deschamps sort of ended up fielding this 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1 even, with Griezmann behind Giroud, which worked really, really well because, hey, guess what? Giroud loves to flick the ball on. He's really, really good at it for Arsenal. So, and like, if you had to craft an international striker, you'd craft something like Olivier Giroud. He takes defenders with him. He winds them up. He's amazingly good in the air. So I think the Giroud and Griezmann element, that sort of partnership, if they keep going with that and they can get the midfield right, then I think that's going to be really, really difficult for teams to stop them from scoring. And I think they could make a real run of it.
So is that Givosh Djorkaeff 2.0 out there?
Givosh Dugarry.
Christoph.
Big Christoph Dugarry.
Birmingham fan here, guys.
Checking in.
Mo, who are your tips? Now that Spain are out, who are you going to go for?
Well, I did pick Spain pre-tournament. I didn't anticipate Del Bosque quite being so... Yeah, whatever he was.
This is a family show.
Yes. Belgium are going to make the final. I think they, Eden Hazard has finally realised that, oh yeah, I can still do it after 15 minutes against, after 75 minutes against these teams. You know, it's just, he waits it out, man. He's just brilliant. And De Bruyne in the middle, transformative for Belgium. They're going to make the final. I think on the other side, Italy are going to beat Germany. I think if France keep playing this Atletico Madrid 4-4-1-1 business, they'll make the semi-final. Between Italy and France, I have no idea who would win that, but whoever wins that will win the final against Belgium. Only just, though.
Brutal. Well, that's the Squawker Talker. We've given you predictions post-mortem, everything you could want in a podcast after England. Please do subscribe on iTunes if you want to listen to more shows in the future, and check Squawker on Twitter and on our website, squawker.com, for all our articles covering Euro 2016 and beyond. I've been Greg Johnson, your host. Nick, thank you very much for coming on.
Cheers, it's been a pleasure.
James, once again, thank you for joining the pod for us.
Thank you.
And Mo, I mean, it's been brilliant.
Well, you were brilliant. I was okay.
Oh, you. thanks once again, and join us next time. Cheers.